Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. Right now on this day, we start back in 1893. It seems like a very busy day, the 19th of September in history. In 1893, on this day, New Zealand would become the first country to grant women the right to vote. Very progressive of them. I didn't know that we had to wait that long for that to happen. In 1903, King Leopold II of Belgium would deny brutality in the Congo. We obviously know how that would turn out later on. In 1952, on this day, Charlie Chaplin would be barred from returning to the US after a trip to the UK. I wonder what he did wrong. He always kept quiet in his movies. In 1959, the Soviet Secretary General at the time, Nikita Khrushchev, would be denied access to Disneyland. Seems like people were just denied access everywhere. Right of admission reserved. In 1973, Carl Gustaf would be the King of Sweden. Interestingly enough, he's the third cousin to the late Queen Elizabeth II. In 1975, on this day, Fawlty Towers, starring John Cleese, would premiere. In 76, a gentleman by the name of Sid Bernstein would offer the Beatles $230 million to charity for them to reunite. They would decline. In 1980, on this day, Mahikeng would be surrendered to the Bophuthatswana leadership at the time. In 1986, on this day, Captain EO would premiere at Disney theme parks. That was a short film starring Michael Jackson. 1989, on this day, Doogie Howser would be premiering on television screens. That was star Neil Patrick Harris, of course. 1990, Goodfellas, starring Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese. In 1994, ER, starring George Clooney. In 2005, How I Met Your Mother. It didn't need 9 seasons, though, so it looks like a day of new starts. In 2011, on this day, Ashton Kutcher would replace Charlie Sheen on 2.5 Men. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and on the show today, we take a look at the race decisions that have taken place in the last 24 hours. We got race decisions from the US as well as from South Africa about 3 hours ago. We're going to speak to a senior economist at PwC, Kantipai, around that. We're going to understand what that means for South Africa and what it means going forward. Then we've got conversations with Remgro and Discovery about results. Both companies gave us their numbers. We're going to speak to the CFO of Remgro and the CEO of Discovery, get a sense of what's happening in both those companies. And then because it's Thursday, we've got an SME on a Thursday. And this week, we're taking a look at a company called Taylor Made Meals. I'm joined in studio by the founder of the company, Taylor Van Melsen. She's going to tell me what she does, how she built the business, and why she built the business.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we start off with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. It has certainly been an interesting day of movements, whether you're looking at local markets or international markets. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager at Anchor Capital, Reko Nare, to take a look at these market movements and try and make sense of them. Reko Pantswe, good evening. Lovely to speak to you as always. Clearly a very busy day on the markets, much busier than it was yesterday.
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for having me. It's great to be on the show, and hello to your listeners. Definitely, as you said, I think there's been a lot for us to digest. As you just opened up with, you know, you've got just the fallout, or rather the digestion of markets as far as central banks and digesting just central bank policies are concerned and movements there. So, yeah, we've had a lot on our plates. But I would say, you know, by and large, it seems to be constructive for risk assets. But we'll get into it as we carry on the discussion.
Reko, when we look at the reactions, right? I mean, 50 basis points was quite something from the US. And I'm looking at the performance of things like the Nikkei in Tokyo. That was up almost as much as it was when that big August crash kind of happened. Clearly, markets had been waiting for this level of good news, and they didn't expect the news to come in so positively, I guess.
Yeah, Jimmy. So I think the initial reaction, you know, was typical. If you think of post federal chair Jerome Powell announcing that 50 basis point rate cut within the US Fed funds rate, I think the initial reaction was typical of a surprise rate cut of that magnitude. In other words, larger than expected. You know, you saw US yields rallying. You saw a softening of the US dollar. You saw gold gaining some strength, and you saw, as I said right at the beginning, risk assets broadly strengthening. I think for us, what was quite interesting was, you know, the way that, you know, yesterday's session did end, you know, last night. You know, you had kind of a reversal of all the factors that I mentioned. You know, by the end of the session, you had yields losing some ground. You had the dollar beginning to pick up some strength. You had, you know, largely the major equity benchmarks. If you think of the Dow ending the day yesterday at 0.25% down, the S&P minus 0.29%, and the Nasdaq down 0.31%. It's actually kind of counterintuitive to what investors would have expected. So I think, you know, you are getting a bit of a sense of a little bit of uncertainty within the markets at that or at the Fed's 50 basis point cut. You know, the question that the market is asking itself is, you know, is there kind of concern around, you know, the growth set up within, you know, the broader market within the US? You know, you did have Fed Chair Jerome Powell just, you know, hinting at the fact that, you know, they're not cutting early may have been a mistake, suggesting that this cut may be a catch-up. But, you know, he also stressed that, you know, this 50 basis point that we did get, you know, the market shouldn't get comfortable with it, you know, which does raise some doubts around, you know, the future of rate cuts. But I think, you know, by and large, Jimmy, I think, you know, from our side, you know, what you are seeing is you're seeing a market that's wary of the fact that if you've got a combination of strong growth as well as rate cuts, that could potentially reignite inflation. So, yeah, some of the things that the market is weighing and digesting.
Rako, when we look at the reaction from a global perspective, and we look at it from a South African perspective, that sense of optimism around whether it's future rate cuts as well. I mean, we got the dot plot as well from the US. Local markets woke up this morning, and I kept an eye on them into Asian session, and in pre-market South Africa, there was already the sense that we're going to have a really hot day. And at some point, resources were up more than 3%. PGMs are back in focus. The gold price hit all-time highs yesterday, as you said, before that retracement happened. Clearly, the buy the rumor, sell the fact kind of narrative dissipated for a brief moment, and markets briefly looked at the situation and said, we're finally over the interest rate thing.
Yeah, Jimmy. So I think largely that 50 basis points across the market, if we just sort of broaden our horizon, you know, across the market, that 50 basis point rate cut being seen as largely supportive of risky assets, and by extension, then largely supportive of emerging markets. So as you said, you know, you had, if you even just look at our local currency, you know what I mean? You've seen, you know, the Rand, you know, start the day at 17 Rand 55 cents. Mostly strengthening on the back of the weaker dollar for kind of the majority of the day today. In our local equity market, you know, as you've already highlighted, you know, you had the all share index largely up about 1.6% in most of today's trading session. The top 40 also 1.6%. You mentioned resources, a big kick there, 2.9% for the day. You know, financials 0.9% and industrials up 1.7%. So yeah, I think, you know, the general comment there is, you know, general risk on, very supportive of risky assets in the kind of the wider sentiment.
Rako, when we look at the developments around that sentiment and around where everything kind of sits globally, South Africa's rand has been doing rather well. And following that announcement yesterday, the rand has been holding its ground at 1750, even coming below 1750. Risk on approach, how long do we kind of see it lasting? Is it too soon to tell whether or not the market is in full-on risk mode, or is the market just saying we're happy, we're moving in that direction?
So I think, Jimmy, one thing to weigh is, you know, kind of if you think of the US and South Africa, just drawing kind of comparisons, I think, you know, last night's 50 basis points, the expectation, you know, a little bit of hope that, you know, we ourselves might get also a 50 basis point cut. But instead, you know, the team there at the SOB deciding that 25 basis points is kind of the more prudent approach. You know, you even had the Reserve Bank governor just mentioning the fact that, you know, that August CPI print that we got last week that we all cheered, him saying that, you know, that doesn't mean anything for the policy outlook. You know, so I think you do have kind of a different dynamics as far as, you know, an outlook from the different central banks. But I think, yeah, you know, you've got what has been a largely more constructive picture out of South Africa post the elections, post the coming together of the GNU. You've got a constructive picture as far as us managing to just piece together sort of about 180 days of no load shedding, and I think that's very constructive, Jim. And we take for granted how constructive that is, because by and large we've worked in a and lived in an economy that we've that's felt like it's going backwards. So I think long may it last, and I think it's something to take and bank from our side as investors.
Rako, when we look at the markets at the moment, what kind of lies ahead from an opportunity set that you guys are seeing at the moment? We've obviously gone through quite a tumultuous time. Everything's gone in so many different directions. We don't even know where the markets are coming or going in some respects. But what kind of sits there as the core of this could be good opportunity going into this risk on kind of new or the last quarter of the year, so to speak?
Yeah, so I think, Jimmy, I mean, one conversation that's beginning to rear its head amongst clients within private portfolio management is that around the commodities. If you think of the commodity players that have been largely punished due to a very depressed PGM basket that we've had sort of over the last 2 years or so, we are seeing commodities begin to lift up their head. Over the last kind of two trading sessions, I think we've already spoken about the strength within our resources and how that's contributed to the overall market. But I think a lot to weigh. So I think commodities is a part to start to look at, but I think a lot of risk to weigh. I think even if you think of the most recent move of the last two trading sessions, the one part has been on the macro side as far as policy rates being a little bit more accommodative and largely painting a bit of a better picture for the commodity players, and the other part has been supply dynamics. We had the likes of Sibanye-Stillwater last week Thursday just guiding to lower platinum and palladium production by about 200,000 ounces. So that's about 1% of global supply. So you've got to like sort of weigh that when you look at the commodity players as a whole. But I think it is a part that we're looking at, and it is a part that we are looking at with interest.
There's certainly going to be a lot of green shoots coming out of these rates announcements. We've got lots to look forward to, but for now, markets are still trying to process and digest and get their heads around where to from here. Thank you so much, Rico, for the time and for the insights. Rico Panzo-Ennare, Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital, joining me to reflect on the market movements today, the reaction towards interest rate decisions, and what lies ahead.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with the former chief executive of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and soldier, Roy Anderson. We'll be looking at leadership style and approach when it comes to solving problems, comparing the role of discipline in military and civilian leadership and strategies for setting and achieving goals under pressure.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we're sticking with the interest rate conversation because that's been all the talk this week. That's been the only thing markets have been focused on since Monday. We're going to be taking a look at the implications of the rate decisions and what it could potentially mean for the economy and for some of the decisions in future. I'm joined on the line by senior economist at PwC, Kanti Pai, to take a look at this and try and understand how we go forward from here. Kanti, good evening. Lovely to speak to you as always, Meneer. Let's start with your thoughts and reflections on the 50 basis points hike by the US. I mean, we'd all priced in 25 basis points, but I think only half the market had priced in an additional 25.
It was actually something that was quite surprising because we know that inflation in the US remains sticky, even though trending downwards. But clearly, the concerns of a recession that's looming weighed too heavily on the Federal Reserve. But I think also it's probably one of the things that, the US has always been about. If they have to contend between the pain of inflation and the pain of unemployment, they tend to go with the pain of inflation. They tend to say that, it's much better that we actually experience inflation. We know that those numbers have come in a disappointing way. So when they look at, the numbers of unemployment and what looks like unemployment, increasing and a recession, they would rather actually sort of contend with inflation and open up the gates for employment. So I suspect that's really what was at play here.
That's quite an interesting perspective on it, because we've also seen that an inversion of the yield curve, which suggests that we could be in for a recession and possibly job losses. And I suppose that's probably something that the US has got serious concerns about. Gandhi, I want to look at the South African picture versus the US picture around kind of just some of the things with the rates conversations, right? We got the Fed decision yesterday. We got a dot plot from the Fed. We love the little dots on the screen, and they tell us how many more rate cuts are coming up. Our own Saab today, and I know you and I were both listening in on that Saab meeting or the MPC meeting. The governor was very vague around future cuts. He said, well, we're going to have future meetings, therefore you'll find out what future cuts look like at those meetings. Why the vagueness? Why not give us a dot plot?
It's interesting. You did say, he said, you are invited to the next meeting and you'll hear. But I think the interesting thing about that is, of course, that, part of our monetary policy and, its effectiveness is that you sort of have, you set the expectations and you sort of have a sense of what's coming. But I guess at the same time, you have a situation, as the governor puts it, that there are too many moving parts. And so in that sense, he's probably opening up, the options for himself. So not to say, look, we see inflation where it is now. We think that we will be, we are on a cutting cycle, because he does say that we found it, appropriate to be less restrictive. So he says, we cut to be a little bit less restrictive, but he's not saying that's the path you are taking. And usually you would want that sort of clarity, but it's probably because he's also saying that there are too many moving parts, the risks, and there's always, there's too many things to consider. And so he would like all his options, on his palm. And that's probably why that he's not going into the space in which he probably indicates where we're going, so that he does not have to, if he has to sort of reverse action, he can still do that. If he has to go further, he can still do that.
So effectively, so that he doesn't have to do what Fed Chair Jerome Powell said yesterday and say we might have gotten it wrong. I suppose that
exactly.
That makes a lot more sense. After today's rate cut decision, there's now a slight skewing in that interest rate differential, because the US had a bigger cut than South Africa. And so that would suggest that this would bode well for the rand, at least. The rand has briefly come below 1750, touching 1745-ish. Is it a good time to be kind of bullish on the rand and say we might get to 17? Or is it just not a time to be betting against the rand? It looks very, very positive.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, actually, because I was talking to a client just today who is negotiating a contract that will probably be in dollars. And he was asked, we're engaging on this. And he said, look, I'm getting into this contract. Should I actually sort of, cage myself right at the beginning of this discussion? Because I know that, he says he's going to be negotiating for a period of time. By the time he concludes, the rent may have gone a different direction. And I think that's the big consideration at the moment. And I think most of us are thinking about that exact same thing. It's something that, I haven't really applied my mind and we are thinking about quite closely. I think what would be important to say at this point is that really some of the sectors that have driven the strength of the rand are things that we've looked at and said, look, it looks like, the structural factors are on our side. But then at the same time, it's very difficult to say whether or not this is the kind of thing that lasts. And so probably is one to be cautious and say, look, let's be happy with what we've got, and hopefully that we continue to improve on some of the political and the structural issues that have improved over the past, 6 months or so.
I think we'd have more certainty around that if we hadn't scored so many own goals in the past. It makes it very difficult to not believe that that could happen again. But let's look at the other comments from the central bank governor. The governor also touched on the fact that there is an inflation differential with the US that suggests that as long as the US's inflation rate is lower than our own inflation rate, we can expect that our currency will always remain weaker by that differential there. Is he kind of alluding, for me it sounded like he was alluding to the fact that he might want to target that next. Are you seeing that the same kind of sentiments to say maybe that inflation differential is a concern for them?
Yes, I mean, he does say, you know, we are not targeting interest rates, we are targeting inflation, and therefore we are probably talking really to real interest rates, but which we know that tend to weigh on the rand and, of course, imported inflation. But it's an interesting one because, obviously, he always says that what we are looking for, and he's always been very, very strong on this, that we are looking for what the rand can buy in South Africa and not what the rand buys abroad. It's a difficult discussion, of course, because we know that we import quite a bit, so the rand buys a lot in terms of having to convert it and then buy imports. So part of the discussion is always about whether or not they care about the exchange rate and whether or not they target that, and the answer to that, they would say no. But the inflation differential, obviously, is between what the rand can buy at home and what the rand can buy overseas. And that is a discussion that, you know, is a difficult one because it actually asks us to actually make a decision on one thing only. And as again, as he says, that there are a number of things that we have to look at. Real interest rates are key because that's where we think about, our portfolio flows. And that's something that also he sort of, I thought was very naughty about when he talks about, that people don't actually buy the policy rate. They buy yield from bonds. And I thought that's part of this whole discussion around actually what are we actually targeting. And I think it's complex, and we should actually think about it as complex as that, and that we have to apply our minds to complexity all the time.
That was indeed a very cheeky comment by the governor. Gandhi, I want to look at the other issues that kind of still persist and how that kind of shapes up when we look at this potential lower anchoring conversation. We know for the longest time the governor said he's going to consider and wants to put forward on the table lowering the inflation band from 3% to 6% right down to potentially even 2% to 3% in line with our global peers. And the conversation around that is obviously to achieve that is going to be very difficult, understanding where we sit at the moment. Unemployment being where it is, growth being where it is this a good thing to do at this time, and is it a good policy to want to then pursue in light of the fact that we might have the advantage of starting at zero at the moment?
Sure. It's very much related to this conversation you've just had about inflation differentials, right? That if we were to come down to 3%, then of course we sort of equalize the inflation differential to the US and maybe the UK and the rest of our big trading partners. But I think one of the key things that maybe we'll remember is you'll remember that the Reserve Bank released a note recently on what they call super core inflation measure in South Africa, and where they really were actually saying, what are the underlying developments in South Africa's inflation? And what is it that actually drives it? And so this super core inflation is sort of made up of those components of inflation that are sort of responsive to our economic condition, if we think about the output gap. And one of the interesting things there is that they said, look, when we look at our inflation actually and what actually drives it and in the output gap, we think that, you know, 4.5% is where it's right, it's well balanced, and that's where, and it's demand driven. Pressures actually are consistent with what is actually happening in the economy. Now, one has to then look at that and say, well, how do you then look at that and then say, we're going to drive that down? So you would have to probably then think about driving down demand to where you would get to 3% in terms of what that drives you, if we are just looking simply at the super core note and say, look, well, clearly then we would have to keep interest rates higher for longer to drive demand down. And it speaks to then what you are talking about unemployment and growth and all of those kinds of things. But at the same time, you know, we need serious work that will have to be done to really think about how we actually get to 3%, because, you know, it's not really about getting to 3% in inflation, because, as I say, there are, you know, underlying factors that are important for that. And so we don't target it as about how we actually get to that. What are the underlying factors? What would we have to do? What pain we would have to accept for that, and then what gains? Because at the end of it, once we get to 3%, there'll be gains, of course, there, because then we will probably have more of a stable currency, we'll have more of a competitive economy in that sense. So it is about perhaps the path we'll have to take between now and the time we get to 3%, and that's of course something that will be of serious concern in terms of many people and economic players that we are within our economy.
It's all still up in the air. We are on the right track. We've got lots to consider, and we clearly are going to take it one interest rate decision at a time. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves, because if we do, we don't know what the other decisions are going to be. Thank you so much, Tlanti, for the time and for the insights. Tlanti Pai, Senior Economist at PwC, on the interest rates conversation, as well as the overall view on how they affect us.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We're going to be taking a look at Discovery. They gave us their full set of numbers for this year so far. Adrian Gore caught up with our editor at MoneyWeb, Rik van Niekerk, a little earlier on today, and they had a conversation around the Discovery performance, but also around the NHI. Let's listen in on that chat.
Financial Services Group Discovery announced financial results for its financial year to the end of June today. The headline earnings jumped by 15% to 7.3 billion rand. The group declared a dividend of 1 rand 52 a share, and that is nearly 40% higher than in the previous year. Adrian Gore is the chief executive. He is on the line. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us. Discovery has focused on new investments over the past few years, most notably Discovery Bank. But it seems as if these investments are now bearing fruit and your long-term growth target of CPI plus 10% is back on track.
Yes, it has been a very good period. The focus on large initiatives like Discovery Bank is a consequence of trying to grow organically. You know, you've got to invest in new starts and you've got to do things of scale. They take time, but I must say the stuff has come through really well. Discovery Bank's performance has been remarkable. I mean, it just is continuously powering ahead of expectation. And I think it's now coming through to profitability we have this year now. So the effect on the group's growth is, of course, staggering in that regard.
Yeah, you've hit 1 million customers earlier this year. You've also close to 3 million bank accounts. And according to the original business plan, when did you foresee to become profitable?
We're actually slightly ahead of target. So financially, I think we're kind of in line with the expectation. The capital spend is better than expected. And I think critically, two things. I think one is that it needs not much capital going forward, which is critical. But the other is, ignoring the financials, the actual qualitative issues of the bank are way ahead of expectation. The scale of the services, how people are perceiving it, it's been remarkable. So it really is a powerful platform for us.
You are targeting the higher end of the consumer spectrum in South Africa through the bank. And most of those people who join Discovery must leave another bank. And that's a difficult market, a competitive market to play in. Do you know where your clients are coming from?
I mean, it's a great question. You know, typically the client at Discovery Bank is mass affluent. It is a big market. Fully 50% of our clients are using the bank quite significantly. So rich, you know, when I say rich, a rich suite of products, you know, a savings account, a credit card, etc. My sense is in that space, people are multi-banked. So it's not necessarily that they're leaving their bank. It could be both banks at the same time. But we are getting considerable usage and a considerable number of primary bank accounts. You know, one of the considerations in starting the bank is how difficult that has proven historically. I think that just the competitiveness and the product offering in the bank is allowing us to clients quite substantially out, and I think that's a great thing for us.
Discovery Life and Discovery Health are currently the mothers within the group. They're the biggest contributors to profits, but their profits grew by 9% and 7% respectively, which is a single digit. What is the strategy to try and grow them 10% plus, or have the smaller and more nimble operations like the bank put the icing on top of the results?
You know, the performance of Discovery Life and Health has been incredibly robust. At that scale, Discovery Health is nearly 60% market share, you know, in its market. So realistically, you can't grow that scale. And Discovery Life is also the leading market share in the retail life insurance market. So you can't grow at double digits easily. That is why, if you're growing a business organically, you've got to have new starts coming through. That's been the model of Discovery. Using that a repeatable vitality model has allowed us to do that. So in our planning, our assumption is that the large businesses will grow CPI plus 3 to 5%, which is what we're doing. And the other businesses that come through create the growth. That is how organic growth works, else you plateau. You know, that's what we're doing, and I'm really pleased. I mean, I think that's what we've tried to get across today, that we should grow 15 to 20% a year for the next 5 years with no additional capital. I think that's the benefits of the model.
I was surprised in your results published on SENS, you only referred to NHI once, and it was just an acknowledgement that you believe the current bill, which was signed into law just before the election, was not workable in its current form. But since the end of your financial year, there has been some developments. The President and the Minister of Health has both said, listen, they would like to engage the private sector to talk about the bill further. Have you had a phone call from Oren Matshwaledi or the President subsequently?
No, business, and I was part of the delegation that met formally on Tuesday with the Presidency and the Minister. So that process has started. I think, we've been unequivocal. NHI is not workable without private sector collaboration. We need more funding, we need more doctors, and that's a position we've taken based on no vested interest. If you simply look at the funding and you look at the kind of layout, it's not workable. I don't think anyone believes it is in the short term. So, we've taken two distinct lines in this. One is from a business strategy perspective, and to our members, not to be concerned, it's BAU, must keep going. But on the other front, we must engage constructively. And I think that first engagement was actually very constructive in good faith. And I think the feeling is we must try and find solutions to making NHI workable. And that's kind of where I think the engagement will go. And there are a number of ideas and proposals and thoughts, so we need to pull them together and continue that engagement. And I think, through the business-government partnership, we've developed a very good bridge, good faith, trust in processes. So let's use that and try to find ways forward.
But yet, there's been many discussions for several years. And before the bill was actually signed, there was also optimism that a pragmatic solution would have been found. Do you believe that a pragmatic solution will be found going forward? Because there's a lot of politics at play here.
I do believe it. I do believe it. I think, firstly, I think the process up to the bill was not acceptable. There was no business felt it gave a lot of feedback that was not considered at all. But the bill is unimplementable without solutions. It's factually that way. And I think we need to find solutions, and I think that will happen. I think the fact that there's engagement now illustrates that there's a willingness to be solutionist in mindset. And I do think that that engagement must be constructive. There are parties that are litigating, as I think you know, and that may continue, but it must be better. Healthcare is a complicated issue. We do need to think through things properly. The thing will evolve over. This is intergenerational. This is a decades-long process. It's not a simple process. So, our view is that we should be constructive. We should be urgent about finding solutions, but we mustn't be alarmist in the short term. This is a process.
Just lastly, NHI aside, there are some green shoots in South Africa at the moment. There's optimism from the Government of National Unity. We've seen interest rates being cut this afternoon, and there may be a slightly accelerated growth on the horizon. What are your perceptions of the short to medium term prospects of our economy and the way it could impact business?
I'm actually optimistic. I think what we've done in the last year, the progress on load shedding, the progress on working with government, the GNU, all of it points to a very, very different dynamic at the moment. So I think we're in a different space. I don't think we should be victims or passengers. I think business needs to invest, needs to engage, needs to push, needs to build. And I think we'll see a return of some economic growth. And I think that's the ultimate tonic. When you see cranes on the horizon, you see growth, you see job creation, things change quickly. So I think we need to really, really use this kind of almost unique window to turn the flywheel and get moving. And certainly from Discovery's perspective, we've been at the epicenter of many of these initiatives and are determined to do what we can.
Adrian, thanks so much for your time. That was Adrian Gore, the Chief Executive of Discovery.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The first SENS announcement that we got this morning from the stock exchange was the announcement that Remgro has given us their full year's results for the year ended 30 June 2024. I have the privilege of speaking to the Remgro Chief Financial Officer, Neville Williams, as we always do around this time of the year, around the numbers. He joins me now on the line to take a look at the performance of the group and try and make sense of what's been happening. Good evening, Neville. Lovely to speak to you as always. Your initial thoughts and reflections on the year that was?
Good evening, Jimmy. Yeah, I mean, the 2024 financial year was a very challenging period because we continue to focus on concluding and integrating a series of transformation corporate actions that's still impacting Remgro's results. So while strong contributions were made by some of Remgro's investing companies, considerable work still needs to be done to bed down these operational performance on a number of key investments. So we are not satisfied with the current results, and this result does not reflect the potential of Remgro. I can explain the decrease of 18.8% in headline earnings to 10.80 rand, and it can be summarized in two broad themes. The first was the negative impact of significant corporate actions implemented throughout the group during 2024 as well as 2023, which actually distorts the comparability of the underlying operational performance of the portfolio year on year. And then excluding these impact corporate actions in 2023 and 2024, Remgro's muted headline earnings performance year on year, resulting from mixed operational performance from investee companies. There were some companies that actually did substantially well with improved performance in earnings contribution to Remgro. Just to mention RCL Foods, including Rainbow, Total Energies, the Outsurance Group also contributed significantly positive earnings to Remgro. The spreads business, Ecola Foods, as well as our packaged gas, industrial gas business, Air Products. So a series of good operational performances of some of our investee companies, but this was unfortunately offset by an increase in the loss contributed by Heineken Beverages. And the trading results of Heineken Beverages was the consequence of a number of operational challenges as well as persistent challenging consumer environment. You can remember that the merger was implemented at the end of the previous financial year in April 2023. And in that first 6 months, serious operational challenges were experienced as well as some challenging competitive and economic environment for the business. So that resulted in a loss from Heineken Beverages. Mm. And also CIVH, the fiber business, it's a high geared company, gearing for growth, but the high interest income actually resulted in a loss contributed by CIVH, while in the previous year they actually made a profit. And these are more or less a theme, mixed operational performance from the portfolio companies, some positive, but a big negative from HeinBev, as well as a negative contribution from CIVH.
I want to look a bit more into detail around some of those corporate actions. I mean, obviously 766, almost 800 million rand of corporate actions is one side of the conversation, as you said. But in the case of Heineken, I noted the 4 billion rand impairment. That's a significant amount, understanding that, of course, there was a profit that was recognized in the previous financial year. The companies come out, and you as management have said that a lot of these things are kind of one-off events in the case of some of the corporate actions, and you don't expect them to be recurring. That obviously means that the business is still on good footing. There are still good assets within the business. It's just some unavoidable accounting transactions in some cases.
Yes, you are correct. But these, over the last second 6 months of the year, these once-off issues have now been resolved at Heineken Beverages. The next 3 months from October to December are actually the peak period for the beer business, because all the issues actually happened in the beer business. There, the old distill business, the cider, the wine, the ready-to-drink category actually performed very well in relation to their market sector. So the next 3 months is actually critical for the turnaround in the beer business. The brewery is running at full capacity, and all the interventions are showing actually a positive impact. So hopefully in the next 6 months, at the Remgro interim stage, we can report a positive set of results for our interest in Heineken Beverages.
Neville, let's look at the environment. I mean, there's been some encouraging macroeconomic environment improvements. For example, having electricity, obviously your investee companies would be benefiting from that, not having to set aside as much for things like diesel costs in the case of RCL Foods and others in that space. Take me through just how the group is seeing the macro environment for all of your invested companies and how you're just seeing the South African picture and the global picture as well.
Yeah, I see the challenging economic environment persisted to approximately the elections. There was lots of uncertainty on the outcome of the elections. Since the formation of the GNU, we've experienced a positive sentiment from a business side as well as from the offshore investors into South Africa. And I mean, you can see that in the bond rates that actually improved over the period since June because of the positive sentiment towards South Africa as a risk country. Also, if you look at the interest rates were high for a very long period. And now we have started with the Reserve Bank have already started today with the downward cycle by cutting interest rates by the 25 bps. The Fed also yesterday cut their rates by 50 bps. So it will be very positive going forward for our investing companies, especially CIVH, that's highly geared. Their interest bill has actually put them in a negative results position. On the industrial businesses that are high energy usage, the last few months of not load shedding actually reduced the cost of production substantially. And if this situation persists going forward, we will see the positive impact on the bottom line coming through in their results. The Air Products, is the Total Energies, the Wispeco's result, the same with Sicalo, as well as Arshel Foods and Rainbow. So generally, very positive sentiment towards businesses. And also the collaboration between government and business is also now improving. So I think where we were 6 months ago today, a turnaround in positive sentiment, and all the macros also turning positive and moving in the right way.
Neville, despite the challenges the business has had to contend with over the last financial year and the year before that, the business still elected to increase dividend per share by 10%, obviously showing signs of strength. And even that, on top of the fact that the share continues to trade at about a 45% discount to the intrinsic net asset value, are we planning more buybacks? I know there were some buybacks in the last financial year. Is that kind of where the business is sitting at the moment, to say, if the market's not going to see the value in our stock, we're going to keep buying it back?
Yeah, the discount is a big discussion point here at Rainbow. But we believe that the discount is actually determined by the market. What we can do is we can influence our investing companies to get that growth momentum going, growth in their earnings, growth in their cash generation, and dividends paid to Rainbow, to the center. And that will also enable us at the center to increase our dividends to the shareholders. And if the shareholders can receive increased dividends and increase earnings momentum in the portfolio, they would see the value of Remgro as an investment holding company. So I think through our interventions in our underlying investing companies that face challenges at the moment, we want to improve the growth momentum of the earnings generation and cash generation to the center, so that our investors can see the value that we actually put on our portfolio. At the moment, they don't agree with that value because of the discount that the share price is trading to our intrinsic net asset value.
Neville, from a cash position, is the business looking at deploying cash towards anything? Are you shopping around for anything to add to the portfolio of assets that you have? Or are you kind of just saying the conditions are turning for the better, but we want to find the right opportunity at the right price?
Yeah, if you look at our cash position, the cash earnings at the center was mostly utilized to repay our part of our preference debt. We utilized 5.4 billion of cash resources at the center to redeem the debt in order to strengthen our balance sheet and to release more capacity for gearing. And now we have the firepower to invest in our underlying investing companies, and also if there's opportunities that we see would be positive from a earnings perspective as well as a capital creation perspective, we have the firepower and the capacity to invest into these new opportunities.
Certainly a very interesting time in the markets. It's an interesting time to be a investment holding company. We wish you the best of luck into the new financial year. We'll certainly catch up as the year progresses. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights, Neville. That's Neville Williams, Chief Financial Officer at the Remgro Group, joining me to reflect on the group's annual performance for the year that was 2024.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's once again time for our SME of the Week. We aim to profile businesses that are doing exceptionally well and see if we can help them do even better. This week's SME is a company called TaylorMade Meal Prep. The founder of the business has joined me in studio, Taylor Van Melsen. Good evening, Taylor. Thanks so much for coming through to studio. Tell us about TaylorMade.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. Okay, so TaylorMade was an idea that I came up with mostly because I was very involved in fitness, health, nutrition. It was something that I grew up with from day one. My mom is a big health freak. And basically, I studied law. I practiced for a bit. And then I left and I decided I wanted to start something I was really passionate about. And that was food. It's my calling. It's everything that I've ever wanted to do. So, yeah, I'm very lucky, very blessed.
So what do you do at TaylorMade? What sort of food are we talking about here?
So we do all kinds of diet regimes. We prepare healthy meals from bowls to salads to paleo stews. We do juices, snacks, smoothies, but anything health orientated. So we even get meal plans from a customer and we prepare it and we quote based on the meal plan that we receive. And then we deliver fresh every week, sometimes twice or three times a week if the client requires it.
So I can order based on when I need the meals, and or
absolutely,
I can order in advance and say I want an entire month of meals.
Absolutely. So we can deliver all at once, or we can deliver twice or three times a week. Usually we deliver on a Monday, Wednesday and a Friday. And then you never have to freeze. It's always fresh.
So do you source the ingredients and you source everything and package all of that together? And I just sort of pick up the phone and say, hey, Taylor, this is what I'm looking at for this week. And then
absolutely,
you guys bring that.
Absolutely. So we prepare everything. It's all cooked when it arrives, fresh, and you just need to heat it.
That's interesting. And from a kind of meal prep and menu point of view, can I have a meal or a package designed by you where you have the fitness side of it and that conversation?
Absolutely, absolutely. So there have been many clients through the years who have said, this is my goal. This is how much protein I want per day. This is my training regime. Please help me design something that fits this, but also fits my lifestyle. I don't have time to eat all day. So how can I reach my macros and my calorie goals without, sacrificing what I want to do in a day at work?
What about meal preps for the rest of the family? If I'm not able to cook dinner at home, or we need to make meal plans for the kids, is that something that you guys offer as a service? I see there's a kids menu on the website.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And basically, I think kids nutrition is really at the forefront of importance. It starts there. Your healthy habits start there. Your kids need to be introduced to different foods. They need to be exposed to colors. They need to explore when they are kids, because they'll be very close-minded once they become teens and adults. And your habits start when you're young. So we prepared a menu that is kid-friendly, where we hide the veggies a bit or we make them taste extra nice. And it's habit-forming, and it's really been successful.
How much time does someone need to give you if they're looking to place an order? Is there kind of a window where you say we can only do orders 7 days in advance, or how does that work?
So we're 48 hours. So for example, if someone orders on a Monday, they'll receive their delivery on a Wednesday. And if they order on a Wednesday, we can deliver on a Friday. Friday, we deliver on a Monday.
Taylor, tell me about TaylorMade Catering.
Yes. So catering was something that I wasn't really sure how to get into, but it was something I was very passionate about as well, because I wanted to expand my footprint in Joburg. And what was a huge, huge industry, well, it still is your TV commercial production agencies. They work long hours and they need good, wholesome food throughout the day. So we started a different sector of the business to facilitate for that industry. And Yeah, it's been amazing. It's a cutthroat industry, but it's very rewarding and it is far-reaching. So if you please that industry, you can really take it to the next level.
What is that next level for TaylorMade? What do you want to grow the business into from here?
Ultimately, I'd love to start a franchise. So I want to expand the footprint into national and then take it international eventually. But franchising is the ultimate goal.
How difficult is it for a business like yours where we kind of have meal prep businesses out there?
Yeah.
And some of them choose to go the frozen route and you've clearly chosen to go the fresh route. Take me through that debate or that dilemma between, do we want to do frozen foods for people or do we want to do things that are not as popular but that taste probably a little different?
Yeah. So frozen is definitely easier from a business perspective. Logistically speaking, it is definitely a lot easier and there's less wastage. However, what I've found is that 95% of the clients that come to me are the ones who want fresh, and those who have had frozen don't want frozen. They want a fresh meal. The last thing they want to do when they get home from a long day of work is defrost a meal that's in the freezer. It's just, it's not very inviting. I'm all for the frozen market and we do offer it if there are clients that want it, but hardly ever we get requests for it because it's not as appealing as the fresh market. However, it is more cost to us. Mm-hmm. And we do need to obviously work that into the final price.
How do you get a team together to do all of this? Because I imagine it's different size for a catering team versus for just a single client with a single meal plan and all of that. How do you keep the team there? Because that's also a cost that you have to think about as well.
Yeah, so they're different teams. The chefs in the kitchen are generally the same. If it's a big production, 500 people plus, we bring in extra chefs. But usually chefs we've worked with before because there's a certain standard and set quality that we try to maintain. Our chefs have been trained by me from the get-go because meal prep is a different market in itself. It's not taking a chef from a restaurant and then working it into your kitchen and just hoping it's going to work. It's mass production. So yeah, so my chefs are... They are chefs, but they were trained for an extensive period thereafter. And then we hire also service staff who are on set for the production additionally to our chefs.
Where do people get hold of you, Taylor? How do people place orders? How do people kind of see what the menus look like and all of those details?
Yeah. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, obviously the website. I'm on LinkedIn as well. So you can hit me up at TaylorMade_meals on Instagram or TaylorMade Meals on Facebook, or you can contact me directly by my cell phone. It's 081-882-9420.
For those out there listening, Taylor is spelt T-A-Y-L-A. I know there's different variations of how to spell that, but the website is TaylorMade.co.za. Taylor Made is the company name. You can go check them out. You can order everything that you look for, whether you're looking at juices, meals, whether you're looking at outsourcing catering. They have you covered. Before I let you go, Taylor, tell me about the snacks. I'm guessing because you're doing healthy things that the snacks are healthy as well.
Oh, they're amazing. They are next level. You cannot go wrong with them. So we've got keto fat bombs. They're like chocolate heaven. Three little balls of absolute bliss and you'll never crave a sweet ever again. As long as you have those, you're good.
Did you say chocolate?
Yeah.
How is that? Well, I suppose chocolate isn't the most unhealthy thing, but
so
how have you made it healthy?
It's a blend of cocoa powder. Mm-hmm. Then we use erythritol, which is a keto sweetener. We use ground nuts, so almonds, macadamia nuts, cashew nuts, that sort of thing. And then we blend it all together, and the combination is just magical.
That's very interesting. That sounds like something someone should try. ladies and gentlemen, go give them a shout. Go check out their website. As I said, it's tailormade.co.za. The business is online. They're available on all socials. Reach out to them. They can do everything from soups to pastas to snacks and even smoothies. Taylor, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much. We wish you
the best of luck with your business. Hope to see you succeed. See, I'm looking at the website as I sit here as well. They do accept all alternative methods of payment. You can pay via card, via payment services, but they're also available on Uber Eats. We'll leave it at that, Taylor.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming through. That's Taylor Van Melsen, who is the founder of TaylorMade, joining me in studio for this week's SME.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We've come to the end of another show and the end of another eventful week. If you've missed any of our conversations, you know exactly where to catch up on the conversations online. They are up absolutely everywhere, so you can go find them and listen to them. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Close is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.